Welcome in to Inside the Icebox here on ESPN Houston's YouTube channel. My name is Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham. We are another Astros podcast. We're going to talk all things Astros baseball once a week. The biggest storylines going on with the Stros, and opening day is finally here. We are awaiting, as we record this, the official release of the roster. And Jeremy, I want to start here with Cam Smith.
Yeah, what about him?
He's going to be there. He's going to be in right field.
You know, I did my roster projection.
Yes.
Which tons of engagement on Twitter at Jeremy Branham. To me, you're gonna have one of Cam Smith or one of Zach DeCinzo.
Mm-hmm.
I put both of them on there because I'm trying to talk it into existence. But I don't know how both of them get enough at bats to justify both being on the roster, because we're assuming one of them plays right field, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cam Smith or Zach DeCinzo plays right field. Jake Myers is your center fielder most days. Jose Altuve is your left fielder most days. Yordan Alvarez is your DH most days. You go around the horn on the infield. Isak Paredes hasn't had any grounders at second or any games at second. They say he really doesn't perform well defensively at second. So he's your third baseman. Payne is your shortstop. Dubon, Rogers, some combination of those two are at second. If we believe that Christian Walker's healthy, he's your first baseman, and neither one of those guys catches. So if they both make the roster, is Joe Espada, who said that he needs everyday at-bats for his young players, going to be comfortable playing one of those guys on the bench? And it's not going to be Cam Smith. It'd be DeCinzo. And then can you find enough at-bats to justify DeCinzo being on the big club and potentially stunting his development a little bit? So the more I think about it, there's only going to be one of them that makes the roster, or Zach DeCinzo's like your late-inning pinch hitter because they cut Singleton, he has reverse splits, can hit righties, that sort of thing. But I think maybe that's more like wishful thinking on my part. I think one guy makes the club. If I had to predict, I think it's going to be DeCinzo.
Really?
I know it was Bowden that tweeted.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All indications say this. Like, are we believing it? Because, it's very early to call up Cam Smith. He's had five games above high A ball. Like, I'd be excited if he's here. If he's on the big league club and he's playing right field and he's batting sixth or seventh, that's a lot of fun. That's very exciting. That's very entertaining. I'm here for it. But do you really want to have a guy in the middle of your lineup playing right field every day, a position he's never played professionally outside of spring training, that's played five games above high A ball quickly into the bigs? Like, that's bold. And I like bold. I like bravado. I like courage. I like cojones. But that's like taking it to a whole other level.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it comes down to two things. It's, are we really doing this Altuve thing? And I know he's been in left field all spring, but we've seen these two sack flies in last week that have been a disaster.
Yeah.
Are we sure there's no chance that they don't just say, hey, this ain't working?
Not
Altuve is
going to
be at second. DeCinzo's in left. Cam Smith is in right. Because I don't think it's a great idea to have Cam Smith in right field, who, as you said, has never played professionally in right field besides spring training, and Jose Altuve in left field. You have the worst defensive outfield in all of baseball, potentially. Yes, you have Jake Myers in center, but you have such two high-risk guys in the corners. It's like you're trading. It's like, would you rather have an outfield that is before the Altuve stuff that we thought was going to be the worst hitting outfield in baseball,
uh-huh,
with Myers, McCormick, and Dubon, to now maybe the worst defensive outfield in baseball with Cam Smith in right and Altuve in left?
I feel like sometimes we break it down too much as a unit of the field. Like, Jose Altuve in left field is not going to be good. Like, I'm okay with Jose Altuve playing left field.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm okay with it, I don't expect him to be a good left fielder. To me, it's about where is he less bad. Pick your poison of where he's going to hurt you the least. And yes, that is a scary outfield with Altuve in left, who's never played a big league inning in left field, I don't think. Cam Smith, who's very limited. Now, I do think that Cam Smith has the potential to be a pretty solid right fielder. Like, he's pretty quick. He's pretty fast, especially for his size. And he's got a cannon for an arm, which is one of my fears of Chaz McCormick playing right field. Like,
he's got a noodle.
Yeah, he's got a noodle. You can live with a poor throwing left fielder. Because, I mean, where you really notice an outfielder's bad arm is when runners go first to third. And if you're in left field, they're less likely to go first and third, even with a noodle in left. But in right field, I mean, it's going to be like Gary Pettis is coaching third base for every team in baseball when they play you. They would be testing Chaz's arm. So Chaz better, range, all that stuff. But I think that Cam has the potential to be average defensively in right field. And then, you know, center field is the most important outfield position, and Jake Meyers, Gold Glove worthy. So, yes, it wouldn't be great in the corners. Probably the worst in baseball in the corners. Would they be the worst defensive outfield in baseball? Jake Meyers might be so good that he can kind of overcompensate it being the worst.
And
maybe
that's why
he's
now I think,
bottom third.
Yeah,
and
that's
the
why
worst.
Cam Smith playing in right field in Sugarland for a couple weeks might make some sense while you figure this out. DeCenzo's in right field. I know everyone's so excited for Cam Smith. I want to see him up right away.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that the pop in the bat, everything looks phenomenal. And, you know, it's interesting. I heard Paul's show, or no, it was Dell's show, talking about Cam Smith. Do you think fans will be patient with him at the plate the way they were with Bregman?
Assuming he has failures?
Yeah, if it's that extreme. What, 1-for-32 to start Bregman's career or whatever it was? I mean, if Cam Smith is atrocious, do you have patience? Or do you send him down and put DeCenzo in?
Oh,
right?
You're talking about from the front office. I think you meant from a fan's perspective.
I guess from both perspectives.
I think that you have to, if you're going to call him up, and I heard Gavin Dickey, I think he told this to Spillane, who's used to be at, you know, the Highway to Hell.
Mm-hmm.
He talked to him whenever they made the trip down to West Palm Beach, and he did a good job of that interview. And I was reading some of Gavin Dickey's quotes, and Dickey said that, who's the head of, you know, head farm director, I forget his official title, but he oversees the minors for the Astros, player development for the Astros. And he said their philosophy is that when they bring a player up, their hope, it's a hope, I mean, nothing goes as planned, right? But their hope is they call a guy up and then he's there forever, which is kind of why I think that maybe he doesn't start on the big league camp. But the moment that you do it, I think you have to bite the bullet. I think it has to be something drastic where you're sending him back down. Jordan Walker, who was a big prospect for the Cardinals, like it'd have to be that level of bad. I think you have to live through a 1-for-30. I think you have to live for, you know, say he's hitting 200 in his first 100 at-bats. I think you have to live through that. If you make the decision, whatever you make the decision, whether it's opening day, whether it's May 1st, whether it's June 30th, whether it's August 1st, I think the moment you call him up, he needs to be up for good, which is why I kind of lean starting him in the minors.
Yeah, I definitely want him up, but if you're going to play Altuve in left, I just feel like DeCenzo is going to end up being in right field, at least to start the season. I just think it makes sense to give Cam Smith time. You want him to be comfortable in right field. You don't want him to be stressing about right field and not focusing on what's going on the plate. Like give it time. You don't need him up right away. Now, him being up, it feels like it changes the conversation around this team a little bit, just the excitement around it goes to another level. Vegas has the Astros win total 87.5 wins this year. I think it's a pretty good number. I think you look at the injuries and that this team has dealt with in the pitching rotation in the past, where the bullpen is right now. Like, while I like a lot of the pieces, I think right around 88 wins is pretty good. I lean to the over because I'm a big believer in Hunter Brown.
Yeah.
But it's a really good number, I think.
I think they're going to win at least 90 games.
Okay.
So now, should we always talk about these football spreads, and you automatically have to give the home team 3 points. And, you know, if two teams are equal wherever you're playing, they're going to be a 3-point favorite. Like, it might be the same thing with me because I have Astro bias. So whenever I'm saying they win at least 90, maybe if you factor in home field advantage or Branham homerism, maybe it's more closer to the Vegas number.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty bullish on the starting rotation, especially the top of the rotation. I think Hunter Brown has Cy Young potential. The way he finished last year, like last 22 games, whatever the numbers were, where he was right up there with like Tarek Skubal as one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. Crochet is one of the best pitchers in the American League. So I think that Hunter Brown can continue that. I don't think it was a fluke. I think that there's enough of a sample there. I think he has enough potential. Like, oh, okay, he figured it out. And plus you have, he added a pitch. So, like, and that wasn't even a great pitch. It just kept hitters off balance. Two-seamer to right in on righties. Kept those righties that off balance that were just teeing off on him before he added that pitch. Framber Valdez has been a workhorse. So if those guys are healthy, I think that this rotation can be very good. Now, the rest of the rotation, Spencer Arrighetti wasn't great as a rookie. Probably it's not fair to expect him to be great as a rookie. So he's a guy that has some pretty good stuff. I think that he's going to be fine as a middle of the rotation starter. I think you'd be foolish to think Renell Blanco has the 2024 that he had. The projected numbers or the predicted numbers aren't as high as Blanco's 2024 season. I think it's very likely that 2024 was his career year. But I don't want him to be 2024 Renell Blanco. I want him to be a solid number four starter in baseball. And then Hayden Wesneski. Like, you don't really know what you're going to get there because he came from the Cubs and was kind of in the rotation, out of the rotation. They like his stuff. The Astros pitching staff is really good. So can they bring the best out of him? You know, Lance McCullers, is he somebody that will factor into the rotation?
That's a great question.
Luis Garcia, it looks like he's not going to factor into the rotation. Like, Luis McCullers, I guess. He's the new guy that's just consistently going to be hurt. He was pitching in rehab games last summer.
I know. I feel
in
like
in rehab games last summer, and yeah, now he's not even throwing. So
this might sound crazy. I think I might be willing to bet on Christian Javier making a start before Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
And that still might be next season, just because it feels like everything that can has gone wrong for Garcia. We just, like, I mean, like you said, he was pitching in rehab games last year. Every time he gets close, there's some kind of setback, and just it. I don't know if it's another Tommy John is on the way or like what's going on with him, but it just doesn't feel good, and it feels very similar to McCullers in the way. I mean, McCullers last year was talking about being ready in spring training and for opening day, and then he had a setback that no one knew about, and he was out again for the entire season. And he's still not going to be on the opening day roster.
Right. Yeah, this Astros, whether it's the PR staff, whether it's the medical staff, I don't know. Like, I don't know who to point the finger at. I guess it really doesn't matter. But as far as we're concerned, you know, in the outside world, you just can't really take it seriously. Like, you try to pick up context clues, like, okay, McCullers is throwing BPs. That's good. Okay, McCullers has appeared in a game. That's good. Like those are tangible. Those are things that I can see happening. They are facts. But Luis Garcia also did that. Luis Garcia also had through bullpens. Luis Garcia was throwing live BPs. Luis Garcia pitched in two rehab games last summer. So I usually don't count on people coming back until they're back. And
yes,
then you have to make that decision. That's why I kind of want to be, you know, still a little bit careful with Lance McCullers. Like, yeah, I saw with my own two eyes he pitched an inning in a spring training game. But I saw Luis Garcia pitch in minor league games last year too. So it's a very delicate balance whenever you talk about Astros coming back from injuries.
Well, even with Lance, and look, this is no offense to him, because we all love Lance McCullers, but even if he came back.
I love Lance. I don't know if everybody loves Lance.
I think when he's out there, the love will return.
I agree.
For Lance.
Yeah,
but even if he's out there for two starts, is anyone confident that two starts is going to turn into 15 starts?
No.
Exactly. So it's like, whatever you get from McCullers, and if you get anything from Garcia and Javier this year, which I don't think you will get anything for Javier, will just be the cherry on top of the ice cream sundae.
Like, yeah.
I'm not expecting anything of it. It's go to a six-man rotation if he comes back. I don't want to move Wesneski in and out like the Cubs were doing. Just let him be there. Go to a six-man rotation. Justin Verlander's gone, so you have no one to placate to. Fromber can deal with it. He's already not coming back, it seems. He's going to free agency, he said, this offseason. So if you go to a six-man rotation, you make it work that way. And whatever you get from Lance, you get.
Yeah, I think for sure. Like, that's the way that you look at it. Now, I do think that you have to factor in, and maybe Vegas is doing this with their over-under, their win total. Pitchers are going to get hurt. Like, how many times has a Major League Baseball team entered with a five-man rotation and left with that same five-man rotation? Like, it's very rare,
I mean,
especially
Seattle,
nowadays.
Seattle was the only team in baseball to do it last year, I think.
Seattle did it? Brian Wu wasn't hurt?
I thought last year he got through the season. Maybe not with Brian Wu, but they got through. They pitched more innings than any rotation in all of baseball last year. Their original five.
Was it the 19 Astros that did something very similar? I think they did.
Yeah, like Greinke, Cole, and Morgan. Yeah, they pitched a ton of innings that year.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
It's very rare.
So we know, like, injuries are going to happen.
Yeah, so you have to start wondering, like, whenever you're talking about a win total and you're talking about how many games is a team going to win over 162 games, you probably should look beyond the five-man rotation. You should probably look beyond. Like, the Astros are going to have three guys that they counted on to be in the bullpen that start. You're on the injured list. Like, Forrest Whitley was being counted on to be on the pitching staff. He's going to start on the IL. Caleb Ort was potentially going to be your seventh inning guy. He's going to start the year on the IL. Sean Dubin was going to be your long guy. He's going to start the season on the IL. So, like, you have to account for that. I think it's something that Danny Brown did poorly an offseason ago, is counting on using a lot of pitchers. And you saw the Astros' first 2 months, they used like 85 pitchers. I exaggerate slightly, but it was like more than anybody in baseball. And they didn't really add pitching this year, but I think that they have guys that are closer to the bigs that they like. Like a Ryan Gusto, who Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com, mentioned that he's a guy to keep an eye on. And would have made the Astros' final start last year had it not been canceled. He was in line to start that game. So
Blue Ball, AJ like Blue Ball is another one that's like a lot of people think very highly of.
They seem to like him. Colton Gordon is another guy, lefty out of UCF, who they seem to like quite a bit as well. Like they added him to the 40-man roster, so he would be protected from the Rule 5 draft. The Yuloa guy, I don't know how it's pronounced, but he got hurt. So, you know, it does make you wonder, though, after the news of Luis Garcia, at least I had this thought, like, should you be looking at an inning eater type of guy that can be on this staff just to, you know, get you through some innings? Because even if he's not in the rotation to start the season, Ryan Gusto is kind of projected to be the final guy in the pitching staff. And, like, that's great. And, I like his potential and I like his future. Probably a guy you want it stretched out in case you need a starter. So I wouldn't hate the idea, and, you know, maybe it's coming, of looking at the market to see if you can find a guy who's capable of throwing 140 innings, even if it's not very good, that can throw 140 innings if he's needed, that can kind of go back and forth between that 5-6 starter spot / emergency starter spot and, you know, long reliever guy for the bullpen. I wonder if they're looking at that. I don't know.
I mean, it would make a lot of sense. So I was listening to the Ryan Russillo podcast the other day. Jeff Passan was on it. And then I also saw this video clip from Paul Hembo from ESPN Radio. Both of them picked the Texas Rangers to represent the American League in the World Series. The Astros currently sit as the sixth best odds, plus 1,500, to get the World Series. The only American League team in front of them is the Yankees at plus 850. I don't believe in the Yankees at all. No Stanton, no Cole. Frauds to me.
Yeah, you kind of ordered them strangely. I would have put Cole ahead of Stanton.
Yeah, it's just name came to me first. The injuries are more interesting.
The Cole one's significant.
Yeah, like I know they have Max Fried now, but so hearing two guys, Jeff Passan specifically, picking the Rangers to go to the World Series this year, I know they've added and people are confident that, and there are young guys like Wyatt Langford, their World Series odds are plus 2,500. So they're significantly behind the Astros in terms of the Vegas odds, at least.
Yeah. I'm pull up their projected rotation because I do think their offense is very good.
Yes.
I think their offense can score lots of runs. I am pretty bullish on their offense. I think they're going to be much closer to the team they were 2 years ago than the team they were a season ago. I think they will score runs. Wyatt Langford, who might be their best offensive player, and I know that they have they have some veterans in there that are pretty good.
He's going to be a stud.
Yeah, he's really good. You know, is he as good as Seager? Probably not yet. But maybe he's their second best offensive player. Like, is he better than Simeon? Yeah. Is he better than Adolis Garcia? Yeah. He finished last year strong too. So I think their offense is going to score. They added Jake Berger. Is it Berger or Berger? I always
Berger,
get confused.
Jock Peterson.
This guy's underrated. Berger is.
Yeah, I like Berger. He kind of, I mean, he's been with the White Sox and the Marlins, so it kind of feels like he's got overlooked.
Yeah, like I think he's a veteran hitter that you can plug into the 5-6 spot that's going to produce and like be a tough out, so it extends the lineup. Jock Peterson is more of a platoon guy, but you're going to see righties more than you see lefties. Like, and he's a guy who's seen a lot of like playoff experience. So I do think that their offense is going to score. The thing with them is like, where are they getting pitching? Like Jacob DeGrom, is he going to be healthy for the entire year? He's kind of in the same boat as Lance McCullers. Nathan Eovaldi's a guy I like, but Eovaldi as a top of the rotation guy, kind of a reach. I like Eovaldi.
I do
too. I don't know about top of the rotation. They're counting on Kamar Rocker to be like a rookie of the year type of season. Like, I don't know if he can have that type of year. He's had arm trouble in the past. So their bullpen still isn't very good. So
Leiter probably factors in.
They're going to have to win a bunch of, you know, 7-5 games.
Yeah.
A bunch of 10-A games. And I think they're capable with their offense, but can that pitching staff win enough games to make it to the postseason?
It's so funny. The two teams in the division that you're worried about is just the contrast in them, how they're total opposites. Seattle is one of the best rotations all of baseball. Their offense sucks, and they added nothing to it this offseason. The Rangers might have one of the best offenses in baseball, but really added nothing to the rotation.
Yeah.
And so you got those two teams. And then you have the Astros, who feel at least balanced, I would say, between their lineup and their rotation. The top of the line at the top of the rotation is very, very good. The depth in both lineup and rotation, kind of sketchy.
Yeah, they're probably
the bullpen.
They're probably going to need a couple of players, whether it's offensively or on the mound, that have good years. Like Jeremy Peña, could he have a career year? He's going to be 27. Like, baseball peaks are usually in your late 20s. It's like, that's the prime of your career. So would it shock me if Jeremy Peña has a career year this year? And look, I'm not saying that he's going to hit 40 home runs. Like, a career year for Peña is hitting 250 with 25 homers and 25 stolen bases and, like, getting on base a little bit. Like, that's not – you know, astronomical, pardon the pun, for him to kind of stretch out this lineup. Because if he's a solid offensive player, he's batting sixth, look at your lineup gets better. Yiner Diaz, can he put the, you know, best of his first two seasons as a big leaguer together? Because last year, I thought he was fine as a hitter. Like, he has some holes, obviously. Like, he swings at everything. Doesn't have great plate discipline. Now, he touches the baseball really well. Doesn't strike out a whole lot. But people are like, well, where does his power go? Well, it's probably his plate discipline. It's his pitch selection. Like, he's swinging at everything. And if you swing at a pitch this far off the corner, he has the ability to touch it, but you're not going to do any damage with that. So can he become a 290 hitter that hits 25 homers? Like, he has that in his range. Like, it is plausible for him to do that. So, like, that has to happen or may need to happen. Jake Meyers, again, not saying the guy needs to hit 300 with 30 bombs, but can Jake Meyers hit 250 with 15, 20 home runs and, like, not be a disaster at the bottom of the order?
I think he's capable
of doing it. Second base is kind of a mystery. Like, Mauricio Dubon's never been a good offensive player. I know people kind of overrate his offensive skills because he's good contact, and people overrate contact. Well, he's great at touching the ball. Yeah, but he hits 250 and never walks.
Yeah, we saw last year when he was in the lineup every day how the production dropped dramatically. Brendan Rodgers, obviously, not a good offensive player.
He hasn't been outside of Coors.
It's so drastic, his Coors numbers versus non-Coors numbers. You want him to be a Gold Glove second baseman. You want him to be the best he can be defensively, and that's why Altuve is in left, is because he's going to be a Gold Glover at second.
He or Mauricio?
I think it's going to be Rodgers.
See, I think Dubon. I think they're going to split, but I think Dubon's a better defender between the two.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how far do the Astros, where do you have them going this year? I've got them winning the AL West. I think just they're more complete, unless the Mariners or Rangers surprise us with a big move at the deadline. This is the one I'm watching out for the Rangers. The Padres fall apart. Where the Rangers find a way to get Dylan Cease. That to me is the one where like people are thinking the Padres will blow it up if they start slow this year. So if they were to acquire Dylan Cease, I'd be a lot more worried about the Rangers. I think the Astros win the AL West. I think they can get back to the ALCS this year. Or just once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But I think they can get back to the ALCS this year.
Yeah, I hate predictions.
I know you do. That's why I'm asking.
I like to react. I think that they're capable of reaching the World Series. I think they're going to win the division. Seattle's offense is not enough. They play like in this, you know, this, like, what was it, Teoscar Hernandez, like the batter's eye's crooked. Like, cool. Your batter's eye looks like my nose. That's not good for your offense. Like, that's not something that's going to be very helpful. I just don't believe in them offensively enough. I agree that they have really good pitching. You know, you mentioned earlier that their starters logged lots of innings last year. The likelihood of that happening back-to-back seasons is very low. One of their starters out, isn't it? And he's starting the year out?
I think so,
Gilbert, maybe?
Yeah.
And might be making that up.
And they've been talking about trading Luis Castillo all offseason.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to do that until the summer probably, though. If it didn't already happen now, it's not happening until June at the earliest. But I don't think that they're going to be able to hit enough. I don't think they'll be able to score enough runs. And then conversely, like you mentioned, polar opposite, the Rangers, I don't think they're going to be able to pitch enough. So I think the Astros will win the division. Maybe it's a tight race, all of that. But I think the Astros get to 92, 93 wins, win the division. Like you mentioned, baseball playoffs are such a crapshoot. But if you have health, you have a top of the rotation of Framber Valdez, Hunter Brown. That's pretty dang solid in a playoff series. You don't use your depth of the bullpen as much in the playoffs because you have the built-in days off, all of that. Josh Hader and Brian Abreu at the back of that bullpen, pretty elite 1-2 punch in a bullpen. And then I think that they have an offense that is capable. They have potential. I like the top half of the lineup. I like Altuve, even though he's turning 35 years old. I think Yordan Alvarez could be the best player in the league. If he's the MVP, would that shock you?
No,
it wouldn't. So Yordan's capable of having that type of year. Esoc's got much different, you know, profile than Alex Bregman, but he's got some pop. He's going to see pitches. He's going to work at bats. Christian Walker, steady.
Going to work at bats.
As long as the oblique is okay.
Yeah.
Pretty steady. I like Yiner. I like his potential. I didn't love him last year offensively because I'm not a huge lover of free swingers, especially with that kind of power. Like, whenever you have the power of Yiner, man, be a little selective. Get pitches that you can drive out of the park. And I think it's one of the hardest things for a hitter to develop. Like, we saw Altuve do it a little bit.
We've seen Peña do it a little bit. I think.
Kinda.
A little bit.
Kinda. Altuve did it quite a bit. Like, early in Altuve's career, he was kind of like Yiner, swing at everything, never saw any pitches. And then the middle of his career, okay, I'm going to see more pitches, pitches I can hammer. And
don't you feel like that's reverted back a little bit, though?
Oh, no, that's what I was getting to.
I mean,
like, last year was back to, like, his early years.
I cannot believe how much
he's chasing 3,000.
We praised him reaching 3 feet outside the zone for a dribbler that he
imagined.
Yeah, it was great. He made contact, but it's way outside the zone. He's reverted back. I think that's why Joe Espada, it was interesting, like, hearing him on, like, Chandler Rome's podcast this year talk about patience. Like, that's the number one thing they want to bring back. That's why you have Paredes. That's why you have Walker. Like, if Altuve and Peña and Diaz can kind of join that group and they can get back to form and not have pitchers throw eight pitches before the inning's over.
Yeah, well, they're not going to get to that. They're not going to get to that group. I mean, if you're hoping they get to that group, you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
I think they can
get... That is an unrealistic expectation or hope.
I need them to... They need... Peña and Diaz need to improve.
That's the word.
Altuve, I don't know.
They need
He's Altuve.
Maybe you just revert back to where you were 2 years ago. Because those guys are who they are. Like, they're not going to have Yordan Alvarez's play discipline.
Yeah.
Yiner Diaz is not going to ever have the play discipline as Yordan Alvarez. But can he... Can he have the play discipline what is optimal to him? Mm-hmm. Whatever that is. Maybe we don't know what that is. Maybe we already know what it is. Maybe we've already seen the optimal play discipline from Yiner Diaz, which, if that is the case, Yiner Diaz is never going to turn into, like, this all-star level catcher that we thought he could be. But if he improves, let's say, 15-20% to where he's at right now, that's when Yiner Diaz can be the best offensive catcher in all of baseball. Altuve, you know, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
Yes.
And I do think that he has reverted back. Like, his swing percentage is up from where it was 2 years ago. His walk rate is down from where it was 2 years ago. I think it's going to be hard for him to revert back to that. I know that he's a team-first guy, which is evident with his move to left field and all that. But you're going to tell me he's not thinking a little bit about 3,000 hits?
He's got to be.
He's not, just a little bit.
He's
and if you're thinking
be.
About 3,000 hits, you don't get hits. You don't rack up that column by walking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what has led to his uptick in strikeout rate, swing rate, lowering the walk rate. I'm hoping that it was like this Astros mentality last year to swing at everything.
It feels like it was.
Yeah, but was it Altuve's, though? Like, I know that it mirrors it.
Or it was just
now,
the way he was playing.
Yeah, but now that Joe Espada is saying that we want to see more pitches and have more play discipline, is that going to be the difference of Jose Altuve reverting back to 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I tend to doubt it. I agree that Espada is trying to change the philosophy, and I think Dana Brown has built a team that's going to change that philosophy by default because Isak and Christian Walker. But is Altuve going to move back to where he was 2 years ago? I tend to doubt it.
No, it feels like that's a plan for spots 2 through 9 in the batting
yes.
lineup. Every one, you do your thing. 2 through 9, you all do this. All right, last thing here before we go. I'm going to give you some odds here. I'm going to pretend to hand you $100.
Okay.
Yordan Alvarez, +600 to be MVP. Cam Smith, +1,200 rookie of the year.
That's a lot of information in a short period of time.
Okay, I'll just change it this way.
So +600 for Yordan, +1,200 for rookie of the year.
For Cam Smith. +1,700 for Fromber for Cy Young, +2,500 Hunter Brown Cy Young. Which one are you placing 100 bucks?
Oh, I can only pick one?
Pick one.
Oh, Hunter Brown. I think there's the best value there. Hunter Brown at +2,500 to me has the best value. I think, like, let's look at it one at a time. Pitching offense. If you had to pick one starter to win the Cy Young, I think Fromber and Hunter Brown are both capable of doing it. I think they're both capable of doing it. Now, Fromber, this stage of his career, he can still get them, but he doesn't rack up strikeouts like he used to, and that usually helps. Hunter Brown's still a very high strikeout guy. He can get ground balls and all that, but he's going to get more strikeouts per nine than Fromber, so that's kind of advantage there. I think it'd be a coin flip between those guys who has the best regular season for the Astros by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the year, who has the better regular season, Fromber or Hunter Brown? I think it's a coin flip. I think it's 50-50. And then you're giving me better odds for Hunter Brown to win the Cy Young than
Fromber.
So I'm getting the value from Hunter Brown. And then on the offensive side, I don't know when Cam's making his debut. I don't know when he's going to be available to make his debut. And there's some good rookies in the AL. Boston has a couple. That Campbell guy, he's going to open up the season with them, which is probably not a great sign for Rafael Devers. Roman Anthony, like, when is he up? He's another guy that has a, you know, rookie of the year capability. Is it Jobe, the pitcher for the Tigers? Yep. I've seen Kamar Rocker mentioned as a rookie of the year candidate.
That feels like a stretch to
me. I don't
me.
Like that one. But the Cam thing is mostly about, I don't know when he's going to be up. Like, if he could potentially be up June 1st. And if he's up June 1st, the chances of him winning rookie of the year are very, very low. And then the Yordan thing. Yordan doesn't make all his towns. Yordan Alvarez, sometimes three-city road trip. He likes to come home sometimes. Yordan Alvarez kind of has a mystery injury every now and then.
Sometimes
Yordan's
smoke.
A little fragile.
Yeah, smoke that sends him home.
That smoke in Atlanta. What do they call it, the battery?
Yeah.
It got to me. I had to be hospitalized. I had to go home. Like, the reason that I don't trust Yordan Alvarez, it was only plus 600, so I'm not getting great value there. But the reason that I don't trust him to win an MVP is because I don't trust him to play 150 games. For whatever the reason. Like, he's had multiple injuries over the course of his career. I think it's prudent that Joe Espada is going to make him a DH only. I was banging the table for Joe Espada to do that last year. Like, he needs to be your Big Poppy. He needs to be your David Ortiz. He likes playing left field. I don't care.
And that hurts also his MVP chances.
It does.
Because if him and Aaron Judge have almost identical numbers, they both hit 55 home runs. So Yordan goes crazy this year. The argument will be, well, Aaron plays every day in the outfield, and that will immediately take people's votes away from him right away.
And the voters become forward-thinking, where, like, they look at the analytics now, and they're like, oh, what does the Baseball Reference WAR say? What does Fangraphs WAR say? And defense factors into WAR. And if Yordan Alvarez is collecting a zero for defensive WAR, you're right, it does put him behind the eight ball a bit. So it is a bit of a disadvantage to DHs, or guys who are going to play 30 games in left field to win an MVP. So I think Hunter Brown by far has the best value of those four.
Yep, I would go Hunter Brown, and then Fromber would be my top two choices, and then Yordan, and then Cam. So we're the exact same order pretty much at this point.
You're smart.
Fromber's going to be interesting, man. A guy who has been known to be a head case a little bit. Will he respond like some people do in contract years and turn it up to another level, which is kind of why I am intrigued by the Cy Young numbers from just being in that contract year. Or does he implode a little bit with that pressure? I don't think it's that, but it's why I wouldn't bet on him. I would bet on Hunter Brown.
What's the difference in money that Framber Valdez can gain or lose based on the year? Like, Framber Valdez's top-end year is what? Framber Valdez's bottom year is what? If we're, again, assuming health.
I think he still hits $20 million, even if he has a tough year. When he hits the market, people are desperate for pitching. It'll be a shorter-term contract. I think he's a $20 million pitcher no matter what when he hits the market. If he were to have a Cy Young, maybe it goes to like 25 a year.
I think 25 is the baseline. I think it's 25.
Really?
He's a 4 ERA. I think if he has a 4 ERA and logs 190 innings, he's getting $20 million a year, no problem. I think the baseline is 25. I don't think there's a big
delta.
And
you go up to 30? Or just it's around 25 and it depends on years?
I think you get up to 35. If we're talking up, like, his best year, which top three Cy Young guy.
Yeah.
If he has a top three Cy Young season, he's, you know, 16-5 with a 3.20 ERA, which might not even be a ceiling. I might have undersold that a little bit. If he puts that type of year together, like, what Framber last year, people think he had a little bit of a down year, but he was pretty dang good. Framber last season, let's look real quick. You can fix this in post. Framber had a 2.91 ERA last year. He had 15-7 with a 2.91 ERA. 2 years ago, he had a 2.82 ERA. Led the American League in innings pitch, was fifth in Cy Young.
Yeah, he's going to get 30
million.
He's
been fifth, ninth, tenth. He's been a top 10 Cy Young guy in each of the last 3 years. Like, even if he had a 4 ERA this year but pitched 180 innings, he's getting $25 million.
Yeah.
If he has the year he had last year, sub 3 ERA, wins 15 games, logs 180 innings, finishes top 5 in AL Cy Young, which he finished 7th last year. He's not getting $35 million?
Like, yeah,
maybe
probably.
Short-term deal.
No, it'll be a short-term deal. Like, no one's going to pay him for like 6-7 years.
Like, if he wanted 30 for 6, like, okay, that changes the conversation. But if he just wanted to get the highest AAV, like, I mean, what, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander got 43 on 2-year deals a couple of years ago.
That's true.
If Framber wanted to do the short-term deal, he could get 120 for 3. So I think that we tend to – I think we tend to underrate a little bit what Framber can get on the open market. Max Fried, who I think there's some similarities between the two, something that Fried's upside's a little higher than Fromber's because of the strikeouts. I think they're pretty similar. In fact, I'm not sure that I would trade Framber for Max Fried. I like Framber. I like that he's a bulldog. I like that he eats tons of innings. Fried got 8 years, 218. And he was a year under. He was a year younger whenever he entered free agency. But what is the math on? What is that? You do the math on that for me, real quick.
$27.25 million.
Okay. So and that was an 8 year deal.
Yeah.
So Max Fried could have got $30 million this year.
Yeah. So if Fromber drops it down a little bit, yeah, you're right. You're
right. If Fromber has a really good year and was like, I'll take 3-4 years, he can get 35 a year.
That's easy. A lot of money. No wonder he's hitting free agency and not even talking
to the Astros.
That's why the
Astros, I have a theory that the Astros shopped him at the winter meetings.
I think so, too.
Because Dana Brown kind of said it. And you have to be careful what Dana Brown says, because Dana Brown says a lot. And a lot of times it doesn't actually lead to anything. Hey, Kyle Tucker's going to be an Astro for life. He's now a Chicago Cub.
So is Alex Bregman.
Alex Bregman, Astro for life. He's now a Boston Red Sox. So you have to be careful listening to Dana Brown. But Dana did say that, hey, we're willing to listen with anybody. Like, and I think he even talked about how he's talked to other teams for Fromber. So I think that they shopped them, much in the same vein that they shot Tucker, liked what they got, traded Tucker before he left in free agency, which I love. I like that mindset. I would have tried to trade Fromber too. Now, I wouldn't have just traded him to the best offer. I would have needed to get a really good offer. And I think Dana Brown had the same mindset. I think Dana Brown went to the winter meetings. If I get blown away for Fromber, I'm willing to trade Fromber. I don't think he was blown away.
No, I think he wanted a Cam Smith-level player in return, but for his rotation, he didn't get it.
Probably.
And that's why he didn't move him. All right, that will do it for this first edition of Inside the Icebox. He is Jeremy Branham on Twitter, at Jeremy Branham. I am Joe George, at Joe George Radio on Twitter. We will be back next week as well. Thanks for watching. Make sure you tune into the Killer Bees weekdays from 3 to 6 here on ESPN 97.5.